from the first evening, somehow got started on prayers by Queen Kunti, because there are some prayers that speak about the importance of hearing, the process of hearing, and the object of hearing, Krishna. So I've just been continuing, and I'll continue. I'm going to read four verses this evening. Two of them are continuing on the theme of Kunti's anticipation of Krishna's departure, because Krishna is about to leave. He's leaving Hastinapur, heading back for Dwarka after installing Yudhisthira on the throne following the Kurukshetra battle and the annihilation of the members of the Kuru dynasty who were intended by Krishna to be removed, and so they were removed. So now Krishna is returning. And Kunti's feeling the pangs of separation even before Krishna's going. She's anticipating that separation. So she writes or speaks, "O Gadadhar, Krishna." What's the meaning of Gadadhar? Youth? Gada. Club. Dhara. Like Giri Tadi. Gadadhar. He's the holder of Gada. Krishna. So Kunti, although she's seeing two-armed Krishna, she's thinking of Krishna as the super soul. Which is very amazing, because to her it's amazing that he's appearing as a two-armed nephew. For her it's easy to see Krishna as moving amongst us, as the expansion of super soul moving amongst us. But that he's appearing as her nephew, that's bewildering to her. Her vision is bewildering to us. Oh, Gadadhar Krishna. Our kingdom is now being marked by the impression of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. Not just the soft sand. And because at the bottom of the soles of Krishna's feet, there are marks on Krishna's feet, and it leaves nice impressions in the sand. She's not like just the aesthetics of Krishna's marks on his feet, but his transcendental feet are sanctifying the transcendental land, and because of this transcendental land being sanctified, it's beautiful. Its beauty is in Krishna's presence and in Krishna's absence. To her, will no longer be beautiful. Text 40. All these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth. All this is due to your glancing over them. Krishna has a very powerful glance. This is part of his omnipotency. We know that with Mahavishnu's glance, he can impregnate the pradhan and the whole creation comes into being. That's a pretty powerful glance. We'd have a big problem if everybody, just by their glancing, they impregnate it. Be a big problem. But that's not a problem because it's not our capacity. But Mahavishnu has that capacity. Lord Ram, by his glance, the ocean boiled. So we also find that when Krishna was leaving Hastinapur and then entering into Dwarka, the ladies of Dwarka were standing on the rooftops because they were shy and standing at a distance. But as Krishna was looking, glancing at the ladies on the rooftops, his glance was so powerful that that glance of Krishna entered within their eye, entered within their heart, and satisfied them to the degree that they felt as happy as if Krishna had embraced them. They were fully satisfied just by Krishna's glance. And we find in the writings of Rupa Goswami that when Krishna was entering into Vrindavan with the calves and the cowherd boys, he would cast sidelong glances at the gopis who were raiding along the side of the trail, and those glances were very powerful too. Not like our catching someone out of the corner of our eye kind of thing. All potency is there in Krishna. And Kunti is declaring that also, just by his glancing over the land. The trees were supplying, the rivers were supplying, the oceans were supplying, the herbs were supplying, everything was in abundance just by Krishna's glance. And Yudhisthira is the emperor, and by Krishna's presence, his whole kingdom was amply supplied just by Krishna's presence. And it's part of the duty of a king to see that the necessities are supplied to the citizens. And you have Krishna present and everything is there. Everything is there. The converse, Prabhupada writes in the purport, the more we attempt to exploit material nature according to our whims of enjoyment, the more we shall be entrapped in the reaction of such exploitative attempts. So the point he's making in the purport is nature's gifts are part of Krishna's mercy. And so when nature supplies, we should understand who is behind nature's supply and feel grateful for the personality of Godhead's supply. What we need, therefore, is to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by developing by devotional service. The indications by Kunti are just to the point. She desires that God's mercy be bestowed upon them so that natural prosperity be maintained by His grace. This was not for their comfort, it was for their service. She, as the mother of the Pandavas, and Yudhisthira and his brothers as the heads of the world to perform their service. A qualified person, as we're going to hear in the upcoming verses, a qualified person thinks on the platform of the soul, but they also understand the soul is embodied, and so they wish the welfare compassionately, the necessities and the welfare on the physical plane. But ultimately that's accomplished by spiritual well-being. So the next two verses we'll spend some more time on. These are very famous verses out of all of Queen Kunti's prayers. If someone only knows one or two of the verses, it could very well be from one of these two, where she's praying to Krishna to cut her affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishni family. I'll read the two verses, 41, 42. O Lord of the universe, O soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. Next, O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges flows forever to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Avyavichari Bhakti, her prayer is for that. She's already there, but she's praying like that. Prabhupada explains in the purport that a pure devotee never asks for anything out of self-interest, in a material sense of self-interest. The real self-interest, the soul's interest, that's another thing. But material self-interest, that's not how a devotee prays. There was many tribulations. Prabhupada lists a number of the tribulations that the Pandavas and Kunti had to endure. She's not asking, please take away our tribulations. All these partialities troubled the mind of Kunti, and therefore she desired to cut off the affectionate tie. So Prabhupada explains, a woman has two families, the family that she was born in and the family that she marries into. And in the case of Krishna, his residence was in Dwarka. When Krishna was in Dwarka, the Yadu dynasty, the Vrishni dynasty, the Bhoja dynasty, they had all moved to Dwarka. So when Krishna was with that portion of her family, they were very happy, but the Pandavas were feeling separation from Krishna. When Krishna was with the Pandavas, they were feeling very happy, but the Vrishni, Bhoja, and Yadu dynasty, they were feeling separation from Krishna. She knew that they were feeling separation from Krishna. So she felt for their empathy, for their feelings of separation. And it was, you know, this way or that way, it was difficult for her. So she's praying to Krishna, please remove that material portion of my attachment. Because when we're materially attached, many things happen that are undesirable. We can't discriminate properly. We lose our capacity to see things in a proper manner. I'll read what Prabhupada writes. A pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. Examples, the six Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya. They left comfortable homes and became mendicants. To cut off family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Without doing this, no one can be qualified as a brahmana, a king, a public leader, or a devotee of the Lord. So what does that mean? Sign up for sannyas. That's not what it means. Because kings are, even in their mature stage of life, they don't take sannyas. And a king requires, a queen requires descendants to carry on the dynasty of the kingdom. And a brahmana need not be a sannyasi. So many in our disciplic succession, Vyasadeva was not a sannyasi, householder. So the message is not reject family life or retire from family life. But see to the spiritual plane. See on the spiritual plane and see to the spiritual well-being of those who are very dear to you. So a king, specifically in this list, is the king. The king needs that qualification. The personality of Godhead as an ideal king showed this by example. Sri Ramachandra cut off the tie of affection for his beloved wife, to manifest the qualities of an ideal king. Such personalities as a brahmana, a devotee, a king, or public leader must be very broad-minded in discharging their respective duties. This was the big part of Dhritarashtra's problem. Later on, when Vidura returned and freed Dhritarashtra from his circumstance, unfortunate circumstance, he demonstrated he was actually a great personality. He had really great qualifications, except he was overly attached, blindly attached. So much so, even he knew what he was doing was wrong, he couldn't do otherwise. Sometimes people don't know that they're doing wrong and they think it's right and they do otherwise, just because of that overly attachment on the material platform. One can't see properly. You can't see properly, you do things that harm yourself in the name of doing something good for yourself. You do things that are harmful for other people, thinking I'm doing good for other people. Just due to that too much attachment. You hear a scriptural direction and you reject it. You take some other form and say that's what it said. Just due to attachment. It's like a, not just only an information filter, but like it creates illusion. And then one acts thinking this is an intelligent. I think we need to close the door. Put the mridanga by the door. Keep it closed or something. Okay. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of his special affinity towards a weak devotee. Anybody here a weak devotee? Pay attention. It might happen to you. If the Lord is especially kind to you, of course, if he's not especially kind to you, it won't happen. But if he's especially kind to you and you're a weak devotee, he breaks the family affection by force of circumstance arranged by his all-powerful energy. Ooh. Better not be a weak devotee, huh? Or better not get some special mercy. Oh, my dear Lord, please don't give me special mercy. Please don't take away all the impure things within my heart. You can take these and you can take those, but not these other ones. These are my special favorites. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him, and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. Prabhupada referred to this very special mercy of Krishna, Lord Hari, in relation to his own life. He described in a room conversation, not in a public lecture, but his chart had said that he would, you know, become fabulously wealthy, and he was on the path to becoming fabulously wealthy. And then all of a sudden, one thing, another thing, and the other thing, and it was all taken away. And he was destitute, without that affluence that he had previously had. And it was very concerning, as it is to anybody that has something like that happen, and he understood why it happened from the verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, when the Lord shows his special mercy as Lord Hari. He takes away, but he takes away all that is inauspicious with so many hands, and with as many hands he gives all that is auspicious in its place. Not just he takes away, but he gives. And for one who has shelter in that which is inauspicious, the Lord may show his special mercy. So Kunti's anticipating, she's recognizing that material affinity tendency within her heart. So she's praying to Krishna, please remove that. And let my attention be unobstructed by those affinities, by those attachments, so that my attention can go fully to you. I read from the purport briefly. Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. This is not an advocacy for impersonalism or hard-hearted character. Rather, this is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feeling of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to change. Desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service. So that's where affinity or affection should be reposed upon the soul. That's how Prabhupada later on speaks of this. Relations of the soul established in relation with the Supreme Soul are factual relations. So that's the prayer. We have our family members, or we have our dear friends, or we have our community. Just like, you know, it happens that someone that we're close to, someone dear to them, is in a health condition, a calamitous health condition, and it's very difficult. So the devotees gather and help give support to that person, but the inevitable is inevitable. The body is going to perish. So how to, within ourselves, within our families, within our community, within the, keep expanding the circle, bring our attention to the affection on the platform of the soul and avoid this unhappy condition where circumstances are in place today and tomorrow they change and oh, but it's going to change. Tomorrow or the next day, it's going to change. And the soul will go somewhere else, etc. So the key is being presented. It's the same message as previously, ardent prayer. That's along with ardent hearing. We did a little vocabulary lesson. Can you remember what ardent means? You forgot. Do you remember what ardent means? Huh? A little louder. Turn the volume up. It's very strong and dedicated. Yes. Like Tivra Bhakti. Remember that one? Very strong. Very focused. Intense, purposeful, very focused, purposeful activity. Ardent. So ardent hearing and ardent praying. So Queen Kunti is praying very ardently, very intensely to the personality of Godhead to take away the material portion of her affinity, so she's not like a ball that's being kicked this side, that side. When Krishna's there, she's feeling bad. When Krishna's here, she's feeling bad. She's feeling happy, but feeling bad. And when Krishna's there, she's feeling happy, but feeling bad. And that's the way of material affinity. So she's praying for mercy, for just being focused on Krishna. It's like, put it in everyday, literally everyday terms, because we're all chanting. When we're chanting, how much focused are we on chanting? We're chanting, but how much focused are we on chanting? There's so many things that our lives are busy and thinking about this, that, and the other thing while we're chanting. And when we're doing this, that, and the other thing, we're not thinking of chanting commonly. Maybe the nice kirtan, some melody goes in your mind. Maybe, something happens, you call out Krishna's name. Oh, Krishna. Like one of our devotees, just when we have correspondence, it's one of the things he, instead of saying, dear so-and-so Prabhu, it's, oh, Krishna. Oh, Krishna. Then expresses his message. Calling Krishna's name. With feeling, with some intensity. That's not from the... Prabhupada is using the position or the statement of the weak devotee. So we're weak devotees. We're not like empowered devotees. We need empowerment to go beyond our own limitations, our own attachments, our own struggles with what the distance, the difference between where we know we want to be and where we are. The philosophy that we've read and heard and love and appreciate, like so many questions that came in the course of this visit about something that's up here and some nice appreciation, but very quickly it goes back to down here. And I kind of stay down here and wish like I'd like to be up there again, or at least like get a glimpse of it again and become situated there. So it's feeling oneself very tiny and dependent. Practically speaking, the position of humility is really easy to achieve. Just try to do something that's Krishna conscious. Sincerely, try to do something that's Krishna conscious, and you'll realize what a limitation there is. If we don't really apply the process of bhakti, just kind of mechanically follow it, of course that's not satisfying, but we don't feel humble either. But if you try very sincerely, it's really easy to feel humble. We're dependent. And unless Krishna is merciful, and that's impetus for calling with sincerity, as Queen Kunti is doing, it may feel uncomfortable, but actually it's not. It's protection. And being unprotected is uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. But when we're protected, it's very comforting. It's real happiness. But that requires humility. It's embedded right in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam. The glories of the holy name and the glories of the holy name and the glories of the holy name, but I have no attraction. Nano raga, dur daivim. Unfortunately, what a great misfortune. That's my situation. So immediately taking the humble position, factual humble position. That's Kunti's prayers here. So, application. How do we apply this nice teaching? When we go home, we don't say anything nice to our family members because that might be attachment. Queen Kunti said not to say hello. Queen Kunti said to be detached from you. That's not the application. The application is see the spirit soul, relate, and how do you best or properly relate to the spirit soul? See that Krishna is at the center of that relationship. In a presentation that I made, I think I did this for the Sun. Yes, I remember, Newtman was there. For the Potomac Temple on relationships, an explanation of relationships, currency of relationships. It was like a way of explaining Rupa Goswami's teaching about relationships to people that don't know who Rupa Goswami is. But one of the final messages at the end was a sheet of prayers to God that Mother Teresa had hanging on her wall. Some of you remember that? Like it's come up even in the course of this visit and people saying, you know, I try to be good, but by trying to be good, I sense that people take advantage. And that hurts. You try to be kind and people take advantage. So Mother Teresa said, be kind anyways. And you may do something that's like building something beneficial and it takes your whole lifetime and very quickly somebody does something foolish and dismantles the whole thing. Do that good activity anyways. And you know, it's a series of those kinds of things. And in your relationships with another person, there's misunderstandings that may arise, but after all, it's between you and God anyways. So a loving relationship is not just horizontal, it's vertical, it's connected to Krishna. That's how you stay on the spiritual platform. It's how you get to the spiritual platform and stay on the spiritual platform. Beyond conceptual, my real identity is spirit, soul, I'm not this body. That's nice. Now how do you function on that platform? Bhagavad Gita's message teaches us so many things about detached work, detachment from the fruits of work, but the detachment of the fruits of work, then the fruits go somewhere. They go to Krishna because the ability is coming from Krishna, the intelligence is coming from Krishna, the capacity is coming from Krishna, the ingredients are coming from Krishna, the results are coming from Krishna, everything is coming from Krishna, so we give it to Krishna. It's attachment to Krishna that sustains the detachment. So detachment from the material affinity is attachment to Krishna. And then that facilitates loving relationship on the spiritual platform. That's Krishna consciousness. Then we can have very nice loving relationships in the family and within the community and our close friends and so on the spiritual platform. And it's not dependent upon which way the wind's blowing or the circumstances. And all those nice things of the qualities of goodness, we can be forgiving of others, and we can be compassionate to others, we can be tolerant, and we can be all kinds of, we can sustain qualities of goodness if we're doing so to please Krishna. And we don't have to worry other than pleasing Krishna. And if there's some other affinity or tendency, we can pray to Krishna, please take that away. And when Krishna takes it away, don't complain. When Krishna removes our attachments or tests our attachment. That happens a lot, from my experience. We pray to Krishna in sincerity, and Krishna removes something and we say, ouch. But stay with it. Stay in the direction like Kunti's prayers are indicating here. Develop our affinity and our attachment for Krishna. Then everything comes to this, fully to the spiritual platform. Okay. Hare Krishna. Easy. It's nice to speak about it. It's even nicer to apply it. Any discussion? Yes?
Maharaj, as a practicing devotee, I'm not there yet at the stage of letting go of the attachments and on the soul, the platform of soul. But still, at the same time, I'm trying to move towards that goal. While doing that, there are pushes and pulls in terms of various attachments. It might be a positive attachment and it might be even a negative attachment. So how to deal in such situations and still retain the focus on that I am a soul and the other living entities that I am interacting with are also soul?
Very practical question. Thank you. Tolerate is the position that Krishna speaks of in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Through knowledge, then detachment. And then detachment can be just at least tolerate. Recognize that those the pulls or the pushes that are on the material platform, that's what they are. And I'm feeling them, but you tolerate them. Attractions and repulsions on the material platform. There's an instruction, and in the instruction there's potency. Tangsta tiksha subharata. And if you tolerate, one of the keys or secrets of tolerating is you withdraw consciousness from there and you place it somewhere else. The somewhere else is on the spiritual conception, spiritual purpose. So I may not be at this level of Queen Kunti, but let me place my attention there. Withdraw consciousness from the temporal and place consciousness on the eternal. At least strive like that, practice like that. Yes.
Just a follow-up question on this. So you were talking about both positive and negative attractions. So positive attractions, you can channel them to Krishna.
Yes.
Yes. What do you do with the negative attractions?
That's what you tolerate. The positive attractions, let's say that's a spiritual, you engage it. And the negative ones, you tolerate them. You don't engage them, and instead you invest attention, consciousness in that which is pleasing to Krishna or that which is spiritual. That was his question. Yes? Okay. Someone else?
Well, I can understand the positive and the negative question.
Why don't you ask him?
Positive attachment is like the normal attachments that we have with our friends, family, negative attachments, as I see it, is like having some sort of enviousness towards others, hatred. It might be different degrees of that.
Oh, I thought you meant something different. Positive attachment, I thought you meant like being attached to kirtan and being attached to, you know, reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and positive attachments. That's what I thought you meant. And that's how that's why I responded to Bhaihari the way that I did. So, in response to what you just gave as a definition, those are, you know, from an absolute perspective, they're unwanted. It's like using Prabhupada's example, wet stool, dry stool. Meaning, you know, this is good, or that the good, the whole concept of good and bad, if it's binding upon the conditioned soul, it's not good. So that's not a positive attachment, it's another type of attachment, classified in one sense. So the structure of family or family values are certainly important in religious life, and certainly in the Vedic conception, family values. At the same time, when one holds those family values, the transcendental perspective is at the same time being detached in the worldly sense by being attached to Krishna. That's the transcendental dimension. That's the positive attachment. Yes, you have something?
Yes.
Yes.
Continuing on my question yesterday and following to this discussion. Dependency on Krishna. I'm just trying to give a scenario from workplace. What happens is like there are so many uncertainties going on, and then usually my tendency is to go and socialize. I used to do a lot of socialization within work. Off late, what happened? I retracted. I said there is no point in doing, you know, much of socialization, basically because Krishna is there. He will take care. One part of me says, I think you're not doing right, why don't you go meet people, you know. The other part says, no, don't worry, everything will be taken care of, sending you to do what you're doing. I'm struggling, I'm not sure, you know, am I doing the right thing, I'm not really sure how to put this, but...
There's some very nice instruction that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives from one householder to another. And Asat Sangha, in the, you know, the six and the six, the verses from Nectar of Instruction, six things that destroy bhakti, six things that enhance bhakti. So one of that destroys bhakti is association with worldly people. So as an instruction for householders, I'll say it slowly, Bhaktivinoda, because it addresses your question head on, cordiality in dealings is not taking bad association. It's not going to harm your devotional service. Cordiality is one thing. Beyond cordiality is another thing. That can destroy devotion. So, apply that. You're in the workplace and you're in this ambivalent situation. Let me follow the instructions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll just be cordial. But you go more than cordial, and like immediately there's some conversation about something that, besides, it has nothing to do with Krishna and devotional service. Quite often it's, you know, in the lower modes of nature. Their exploits, or their spending money, or, you know, investing, or vacation, or, you know, sense gratification or exploitation of something. Commonly, yes? So, remain cordial and don't get involved. You're polite. You're not like, you know, yuck. Be cordial, but don't get involved. Be helpful, be, you know, if they need something, help them with something. But keep it very simple, on a simple level. Because your consciousness should be inwardly directed upon Krishna. So does that help? So you can feel when you're in the workplace, here's Bhaktivinoda, he knows, he's a householder. He is, you know, dealing with worldly people. This is a practical instruction according to, an application point according to Rupa Goswami's instructions. This is okay, and more than that's going to be debilitating for your spiritual well-being.
To add on to that, what
yeah.
you said, yeah. Especially when you start opening up with them, then it gets into a different topic. Either you feel like you don't know what, because you know, you start talking, they ask for something, you know. Here you're expected to know this, you're expected to know that. That is not related to Krishna. So, you know, you feel like, am I missing something, you know. It gives a different dimension, and then it really, so that's the reason which I want to avoid.
Yes.
Or even get into that situation. But
I'll cut and paste and send to you that section. You have a copy in your home of Bhakti Loka?
I can share.
You sent to him?
I can share.
Okay, you cut and paste just that section of advice to householders about, you know, that which is to be avoided, and where it's okay and where it's not okay, where there's the line. Very practical. Yes.
So going back to this good attraction and bad attraction.
Yeah.
So like people in general, they like to do different things, including us, like, you know, go sightseeing.
Or something.
Yeah, just general, you know, just eat good, go to nice places, decorate houses, go to beach. Some people like to go boating. The different kinds of things people like to do. So is it a good attraction or bad attraction in between? Where do we draw the line? How do we understand this as well?
I thought we went over that already. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, speak of Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita, of one who is, what's the moderate or temperate in his eating, work, and recreation.
Yuktha.
Huh?
Yuktha regulated. Yuktha viharas.
Yes.
So, what's appropriate for a devotee? You know, for a sincere devotee. A nice devotee family, they have children. So, there are things that are more in the realm of appropriate, and things that are less, and things that are not in the realm of appropriate. So for children, exposure to scenes of nature, just like when we had our Gitanagari retreat, the kids were taken, they were identified, you know, here's some different kinds of herbs. You know, go into nature, not just like hang out in nature, but educational. And so nature walks, nature trail, get out of the four walls. And, you know, as an individual, some families I know, they like to go camping. It's, you know, and when they go camping, it's maybe hiking, and, you know, set up a tent and just like get away. And but what they do when they're away is not activities of sense gratification. It's, you know, they take their reading material and chanting, and they absorb themselves in something devotional. Then there's that gray or borderline area, that, you know, recreational sports, you mentioned some of them. It's borderline. I won't spend too much time there. It's, you know, boating. But it's good if something that, for a devotee, if it's makes the mind more peaceful, if it's healthy, if it promotes, you know, things that will keep the body healthy and strong, exercise, hiking, those kinds of recreation things, and appreciating Krishna, the wonder and the beauty of Krishna. With that purpose in mind, that's on the, you know, that's good, that's okay. Then there's some things that are, I mean, because I travel a lot, and I'm sitting in a plane next to people that are talking about all kinds of stuff, and the things that they talk about, it's like, whoa, you know, Las Vegas, and what, you know, what they're looking forward to the next time they go to Las Vegas, and it starts with gambling, and then it goes to other things, and whoa. Because one thing, something innocent may very easily lead to something that's not innocent. At least, apparently innocent leads to something that's not so innocent. I want to totally, better to err on the side of caution. That's a rule that I feel is wise to follow. I'm not being like super definite, but I hope it's a little helpful. You want to follow up on it a little more?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, if you're in a temple or some holy place or with sadhu, it's just so easy to be Krishna conscious. But to go on hiking, which I personally don't, but if I was to go, it would be very difficult to be Krishna conscious, because it's difficult to keep Krishna, or even any kind of, you can try a little bit to chant, to hear, but after some time it's very difficult to be Krishna.
Well, I know some people that really like hiking, and they're very Krishna conscious. And, you know, for them it's exercise, it's nature, it's getting away, and, you know, when how they describe what they were thinking of while they were hiking, what they were experiencing feeling close to God, devotees. And, you know, the tension of everyday tension just is gone. It helps them do their everyday activity, and it keeps, you know, keeps them healthy. So just like, you know, you missed it, but Mahamantra was saying he can't do japa walks. He can't like take taps and chant at the same time. But some people can. They like japa walks. So when a devotee comes to his home and says, let's go on a japa walk, and oh, what do? I can't walk and chant at the same time. That's as you started at the beginning, different persons like different things. So we should be restrictive about what those different things are, if they're going to lead us to Krishna or not.
So does it depend on the maturity of us?
Sure. Sure. It depends on our nature as well. If I tried to do some things that some people do, and some people try to do some of the things that I do, they couldn't do what I do. They couldn't travel like I travel. They'd be in a coffin. But for me, it's not, you know, it suits me, and etc. So we have to look at our personalities and our what we're. Is it promoting Krishna consciousness factually, not just in name, but factually? Is it helping us to be Krishna conscious? Like Ganapati Maharaj, like he likes being in nature. And for him, it's not Maya. It's it's a peaceful condition that works for him. For somebody else, it's Maya. It's sense gratification, you know, but him, it's not. His nervous system is such that it's soothing for him. So he spends like the summer in Grand Canyon distributing books at a legal spot. But he's so regulated, he's like, you know, those that have been with him can't keep up with it. He's like so regulated to the, you know, yes. Vidarbha Sutta, yes.
Maharaj, identifying certain attachments in the heart and understanding the value of carefully weeding away those attachments, and yet the point that you're making is to, whenever you identify that attachment, to just, you know, take that attachment and repose that in Krishna and continuously keep trying to do that. Is there a necessity to look at those attachments and try to work on them separately, or just by, you know, just focusing on our services and our sadhana, expect that at some point Krishna will take it away, transform it? Should we live with that? Sometimes the attachments can be really big, and a lot of energy can get, you know, invested in just trying to take care of the negative. So just focusing on the positive, can we be assured that everything that we require will be taken care of?
No. And the Gundicha Marjana Leela is an expression of that. And the way that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments, the working on has to be the cart that's pulled by the horse. And the horse is, you know, the sadhana, bhajana kriya. Bringing our attention to Krishna, and bringing our attention to Krishna, and bringing our attention to Krishna. And as we bring our attention to Krishna, those anarthas become more clear, more prominent, and, you know, detachable, because there's spiritual strength and there's spiritual focus and there's light. But in darkness, we just, like, it's just, we can't see properly. They're not, you understand, they're not so visible to our conscious awareness. So focus and then remove. You have something specific in mind, or that's good enough? Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, continuing from the cordial relationships, just one thought is expecting, like, being just cordial, isn't that like a poor bargain? At the most, you could be cordial while there's...
A poor bargain? Can you explain that term? What do you mean by that?
Like, in a situation like where...
Is that implicating us in their stuff? Is that what your question is?
No. An environment where you could at the most be cordial with other people.
Yeah.
And not be like how you are with, like, devotees. Isn't that like a compromise?
I don't understand the question.
So, say...
give me an example.
A workplace where you are interacting with other, you know, human beings, but at the most you could be just cordial and helpful.
Well, let me give a recent example that's, as you're speaking, is coming to mind. To get here to Washington, D.C., it was in an airplane. And next to me was an American lady, and next to her was an older American lady, and next to her was a young American person, and they were both from Michigan, and they were talking about Michigan and Michigan and Michigan and the lakes and this place and that place, and oh, I know so and so, oh, you know so and so, and you know, the whole ride. And then she spilled her coffee. And like, you know, the fun was over, and it was like, oh. So then he got off, and we were continuing on the next leg of the segment of travel. And so I turned to her, because he had gone off the plane, and I asked her, you know, are you okay? Did you burn yourself? You know, cordial. Because they were just like going at it, so I didn't need it. I hope, you know, she said, no, it was okay. And I said, you know, you smell like a cup of coffee. And she laughed. She was like, oh, you've offended me. She turned, because then she started yakking with somebody behind her and said, you know, he said, it's true, I smell like a cup of coffee. And yakety yakety yak 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 with those people. And because I wasn't talkative, you know, she, when the plane wasn't full in the next segment, so she got off and she sat with somebody she could yak with. But the impression that she is going to carry about me is part of my service to Krishna. I was polite. You know, I was concerned about her well-being. And at the same time, you know, a sense of humor. And, you know, I could exhibit a sense of humor. It's not like, you know, a stoic something. Stuffy-wuffy. So that's helping her form some impression about Krishna or Krishna devotees, which forms an... So, cordial. But I don't... You know, I didn't... I generally don't get into, like, blah-blah conversations with people. I've got lots of stuff I've got to do. Sometimes they try to start it up, and I'm cordial. And then, you know, click on my computer and they get the message.
With like personal interactions, like you go back to office like environment day after day. Like this example, you go away from such an environment after a brief moment.
Yes, that's true.
While the
workplace, it's the same people again and again.
So, although there's they can
let you know, but if you don't participate in their blah blah sessions, they may try to draw you in, and at a certain point they realize you're not going to be drawn in. It's just like, you know, they may offer you something to eat, and after a certain point of time they realize, you know, he's not going to eat certain things. That's the kind of person he is. He's just not going to eat non-veg stuff. He's not going to eat our stuff. And he's polite. He's not pushing his thing on our thing or condemning us, you know, you people are bad. He's just like, he's content. And he's the disciplined person. And as far as, you know, the social interaction thing, he's polite. But, you know, he doesn't get drawn into, you know, sports and politics and money and, you know, etc., etc. The things that people talk about all the time. He just doesn't do that. So he's like, he's no fun. So we just talk to our little circle of people about all those things. But, you know, he's polite and he's very diligent, and he's a good member of the team in the workforce, just as Nike, not a big social guy. That's okay. Pretty much what you do, probably. Yeah.
The poor bargain, I just wanted to explain. What I was compared to an environment where you can always talk and do all that. They do, but like with the, like when you're in a devotee environment, it's completely different.
Okay. Yeah, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Because, for many reasons. With devotee conversations, at least, you know, nice practicing devotees, conversations may go in different areas, but it goes to Krishna. And when conversations go in different areas with non-devotees, it goes not to Krishna. It doesn't remind you of Krishna. It covers. So we don't like that. I don't like that. Don't want to participate in that. Anything else? Just Jai Shri.
Yeah, both of us.
Okay. You first.
Actually, this is a clarification.
Okay.
I was just wondering, like, we hear often that we should practice makes perfect, and
okay.
we should try to apply what we heard.
Okay, good.
So I was just thinking, a lot of times, I find myself, it's, like, when trying to apply, it's more theoretical. It's, like, more in the mind than...
That's in the beginning.
The thing is, like, I try to, keep on applying, but
it stays in the mind, huh?
It's like you become an expert in applying it theoretically rather than...
Well, here's another phrase besides practice makes perfect, or practice makes you a theoretical perfectionist. Another phrase that Prabhupada more commonly used than practice makes perfect is, by practicing something, it becomes second nature. So the other is conditioned nature. The conditioned nature, let's say somebody gets angry. So they can practice something that's other than anger. And if you practice and practice, it becomes your nature of how you reply to circumstances other than anger. But it takes like a shift or some transformation inside. But then that becomes second nature. When something, this is what I feel and this is what I do or say by practice. That's not theoretical, that's inside. So, how to switch the channel is kind of like... I know one thing that makes a big difference, and that's doing it for the pleasure of another person, besides like self-improvement. Because that's very popular, self-improvement books. But where's the devotion? Where's the other person? It's just like, you know, make me feel better about myself or something like that. A little another piece in my resume that I can do this too now. But devotion is, you know, so something is coming from Prabhupada's books, and he says something, or here, like, you know, Queen Kunti's prayers. So, let me see if I can apply that. And think, you know, let me follow Prabhupada's instruction here. Let me take that inside. And by so doing, Prabhupada, by carrying out Prabhupada's instruction, he'll be pleased. That's inside, not just mind. I'll give you a personal example of that. One of the reasons that I started having retreats in Gitanagari and continue to have retreats in Gitanagari is that Gitanagari farm was purchased from New York at a time when Prabhupada said those temples that are strong and have the capacity to do so should have a rural project that shows simple living, high thinking. So our GBC, we got up a bunch of money, raised a bunch of money, and went around looking for a farm. Looked in New Jersey, went looking upstate New York, kept looking, and took like a year, and finally found, like, because he was a perfectionist, he found like a super duper property, super agricultural property, so far away from New York, it just like didn't work. So, out of dedication to Srila Prabhupada's desire, then that farm that was spawned by the New York temple just kind of orphaned later on. Not good. So some service to Prabhupada. And then continuing, it was not doing well for some time. And Bhakti Tirtha Swami, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, asked him, you know, you're looking for, so why don't you go there? There's a project that's, Prabhupada went there and, you know, make it happen. So he went there to try to make it happen. And he did a lot to help Gitanagari, and then he left. So when I go there and I think about that service in Gitanagari, my thought is wanting to see Prabhupada smile and wanting to see Bhakti Tirtha Swami's big smile. That's what's in here.
I like hearing and reading so much. I mean, to the extent, like, when I get into hearing or reading, I get somewhat, like, really addicted to it.
Good.
So, the thing is that, like, it's very hard for me to get away from it. Like, due to all these...
Such a wonderful problem.
Maharaj, what happens is, like, when I hear, I want to be, quiet atmosphere, and I don't know, like, very hard to explain. Like, I just want to go on and on. But, I mean, my question is, I was wondering, like, this kind of obsession I have, is it like out of passion?
Well, like one of the other questions that was asked the other day, assume that there's a mix. Assume that we're not yet pure devotees, and so there's a mix. Now, what are you going to do about that? Now, back to Vidarbha Sutta's question, the positive side, you continue, and you monitor the other one. And to the degree that it's like supposing passion leads to attachment. So supposing your children make noise. You're disturbing my reading. I mean, maybe you don't do that. But if something like that were to happen, then that, you know where that's coming from. It's not coming from Shuddha Bhakti. So attend to that on the strength of the spiritualization of your consciousness that come from hearing and chanting, and apply instructions that come from the hearing and chanting in that circumstance and in your life in general. Does that help?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I mean, I often get it out, like, I hear from your lectures, like, information collecting, basically, like, I don't know, like, am I like that? Because I don't feel that I'm applying the instructions so much.
So work on applying the instructions more. And you can ask your family members how you're doing. They'll tell you. Right? Sure, if she would ask me, I'll be glad to tell her. Okay, we're done. Yes.
It's not related to this topic.
It's not related to the topic, but after you put deities to sleep.
Since we're always chanting, in case like we chant, aren't we waking up the deities?
After putting the deities to sleep, and then we have kirtan? Is that what you're saying?
No, since we like we're thinking of Krishna, and like after we keep the deities asleep, won't we awake them?
By thinking of Krishna.
By thinking of Krishna.
Or chanting.
Yes.
Krishna's sleeping is different than your sleeping. If we put you to sleep and then went, you know, into your room and started chanting, we would wake you up. Maybe. Thank you. But Krishna sleeping is not like that. It's you know what the phrase in Sanskrit, nidra means sleep, and yoga nidra is what the Lord does. Transcendental slumber. In fact, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it says, his eyes are open. Garbhodakshay Vishnu, during the time of the cosmic annihilation, he's in this state of mystic slumber, yoga nidra. You can't do that. Okay? It's different. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. J